This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. I'm live from Portland. In our D.C. studio is Charles Sauer, libertarian economist and president of the Market Institute, marketinstitute.org. And you can tweet him at Charles Sauer. It's S-A-U-E-R is how he spells his last name. Charles, welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
Charles?
Thanks for having me.
Great to have you with us. So the Republican... You're welcome. So the Republicans are all kind of twisted up in knots right now, trying to figure out what they're actually up to with regard to how to repeal Obamacare, et cetera. And it seems to me like this is the absolute biggest hole in the whole libertarian philosophy. Is the essence of it being essentially I got mine, screw you, There's how I know we've talked about this before, but I don't think I've ever achieved any clarity at all in terms of understanding your worldview in how in a country as diverse as the United States, where you've got people, from dirt poor, you've got people who are not capable of taking care of themselves, whether they're handicapped or mentally handicapped, young children. You've got elderly people. I mean, we've got this huge spectrum of people. We've got, cities, rural, rich, poor, all this kind of stuff. And yet, as a matter of national security, if we don't have a national healthcare system, we are vulnerable to a bioweapon. As a matter of national productivity, if people don't have access to healthcare and they still have to work and they're sick and they're sneezing all over your salad, we're losing, and we do every year lose literally billions of dollars of productivity to people, being unnecessarily sick because they were sickened by workers around them who couldn't afford to take a day off or whatever. Which I guess is kind of wandering into a slightly different topic, but how, and I realize, given the caveat, there's never been a successful libertarian country or state or even city anywhere, so we don't have an example for this. But how in your Ayn Rand mind there, Charles, how would you provide health insurance or health care? Forget about insurance. How would you provide health care to every American?
Well, fortunately, what I'm looking for is affordable, equitable health care, a way to increase the quality, access, and lower the price to health care. And this is something where I actually find it usually appalling where the left is on healthcare, and that's this top-down fascist approach where they believe that the bureaucrat on top knows how everybody needs healthcare, where they're going to do it, and that's the way to give healthcare to the healthy and not actually address the needs of the sick. So what I'm for is providing care to the sick. So where we have is we actually have functioning markets in the U.S. We have a surgery center in Oklahoma. They list prices that is a cash price. Their cash price is about 20% of what it costs at the nonprofit hospital down the street. And that's what people are actually paying to the hospital and what they're actually paying to the surgery center in Oklahoma. But it's not just the prices there, because we can actually see competition working in this market, because we also have surgery centers in Florida, in Virginia, in California, and moving also into Colorado and a few other states. And the difference in the prices in these cash places are within an airplane ticket of each other. And that's because there actually is competition in healthcare. And this is the libertarian approach, is to free it up. We have a family doctor in Texas who charges cash prices. She gives discounts to patients that wear in spurs. And you can't do that if you're working on a government for a government program like Medicare or Medicaid, but she treats day laborers and billionaires. She's amazing. Juliet Madrigal Dersh down in outside of Austin, Texas. But the libertarian approach is to let the free market work, to give people money or let them keep their own money and shop for healthcare. And that's why the Graham Cassidy bill is great, because it takes the money outside of DC. It stops this federal bureaucrat and it gives it back to the states. It's not the perfect libertarian approach, but it starts increasing the ability for people to have choices by at least starting by letting the states have choices on how to provide health care.
Okay, I'm not going to get all reactive about your calling single-payer fascistic when the definition of fascism is the merger of, is basically the acquisition of government power by corporations. So it's the opposite of that. But in any case, you never answered my question, Charles. How are you going to provide health care to a homeless person on the street in San Antonio? How are you going to provide health care to a mother of two in Akron, Ohio, who's working a minimum wage job and literally has to maybe one day a week only eat half the food that she would normally eat because she can't afford it? How are you going to do that? I mean, you're not going to do that by saying, "Hey, you can shop prices at surgery centers." This answer by anecdote is nonsense. Let's talk systemically. How
are
you
talking
provide
about? Whoa.
To every American?
I have the actual non-anecdotal story. You made up a story about a homeless person on the street. The fact is I gave you a real price. The Oklahoma Surgery Center of Oklahoma charges 20% of what the nonprofit hospital charges. I don't use the anecdotes here. I have real numbers, and
so
that's the deal. All we have on your side are the anecdotes.
Charles, there are homeless people all over the United States. So you're saying that the homeless person needs to go to that surgery center and should be delighted that the surgery to cut away the MRSA on their leg or whatever is only going to cost them $22,000 instead of $29,000. Is that what you're saying?
Actually, what I'm saying is that the government programs that you're advocating for have already proven to fail. And while those government programs are proving themselves to fail, what is coming up and propping up and helping those homeless people that you're talking about are free markets and charities. That is what is helping those people. But the government programs, look, we have, again, non-anecdotal. We have research that came out of the only randomized study in Medicaid that showed that it didn't increase or improve the health of the people that got it. That is non-anecdotal. Coming up with stories and trying to bring a figure into this that is going to imply sympathy, that's anecdotal.
So setting aside all the words here, what I heard you say is that the way that you're going to provide health care to people in the United States who right now can't afford to buy health insurance, from homeless people to low-income people, is that they should depend on charity.
I'm saying that the government programs that are on top are already making it unaffordable. The only way to make it unaffordable are to use like a concierge medicine.
I'm not asking you for a critique. I'm asking you for a solution.
Yeah, the solution is happening in the U.S. as we speak because the government programs have created this problem. We have Atlas MD in Kansas. They're charging $50 a month for unlimited visits to your doctor. We have different versions of that in Florida where you have unlimited access to your doctors for something that's a reasonable
price. What happens when your doctor
price.
Finds a lump? What happens when your doctor says, "Hey, look at this. We got a stage 1 cancer here. It's only going to cost you $70,000 to have the surgery and the radiation."
Well, the $70,000 is what it costs when you have Medicare not paying doctors, when you have hospitals that are not treating the patient.
It's only
going to
cost you $40,000 because we're super competitive.
Again, where I started with was 20%, all right? So if you work back from your $70,000, what are we talking about, $15,000? If you find a lump, it should be worth $15,000, and there's charities for the people that can't afford that $15,000. But what is bankrupting the system is the fact that right now,
charities
hospitals are charging
$70,000. Charities in the United States last year provided about $5 billion worth of all types of services. That's how much we spent on healthcare in the United States in 3 days. I mean, anyway, Charles Sauer, marketinstitute.org is the website. You can tweet him at Charles Sauer, S-A-U-E-R. Charles, thanks. Great talking with you.
Thank you.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Stick around. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Give me just a minute to get my computer back up. Here we go. All righty, let's see here. Ellen in Ambrose, North Dakota. Hey, Ellen, what's on your mind? Thanks for watching Free Speech.
Yes, I would. My co-worker's dad was a Democrat, and he's been watching Fox News quite regularly, and she says he's getting brainwashed really seriously. And she wonders if there's any way to stop it or do anything about it. And so I told her I would talk to you and ask you if you know any way to deal with it. Or
Yes, I do. Jen, what's her last name? Slater? Jen? Anyway. She made this brilliant movie and I'm in the movie, but just a very little bit of it. But it's called The Brainwashing of My Dad, and you can watch it on Netflix. Jen Senko. That's right. Jen Senko and or Senko S E N or K O or S E. Yeah. I think it's S E N K O. Yeah, that's right. But the important point is the movie's called The Brainwashing of My Dad. And it's the story of her father, who is this lovely, you know, Democratic, elderly Democratic gentleman who started, you know, who retired and started watching Fox News all the time. And not only did he become, you know, right-wing Republican, but he became irascible, irrational, unreasonable, you know, racist. I mean, it was just amazing. It was a night and day transformation. She documents this in excruciating detail. And then she talks about basically kind of the family intervention, which was getting him away from Fox News, you know, long enough for him to be deprogrammed. Because what you're dealing with here, Ellen, is a cult. This is a cult, just like Scientology, you know, just like, you know, pick your cult, you know, Jim Jones. This is in fact, it's a death cult. You know, it's promoting policies that lead to people's death. And so the step one is to extract them from the cult, which means get them away from Fox News for a couple of weeks, or expose them to other things, you know, so that they can hopefully make up their own minds. Most of these people have been so, you know, one of the more important parts of the Fox News brainwashing, or one of the more effective parts of the Fox News brainwashing, is the continual assertion that all other news is filled with lies and shouldn't be believed. And yeah. So, you know, I strongly recommend you check out that movie. Are you familiar with it, Ellen?
Yes, I've heard of it, yes. And I can recommend it to her. I didn't know it was called The Brainwashing of My Dad, which is almost exactly what's happening to her. And I also wanted to ask you, I was watching, I'm only watching Free Speech now, and I noticed a little green box on your show that had the letters RT. What does that mean?
That's our evening TV show. I do a TV show, and I will be doing it for one more week, and then we're stopping. I've been doing it for 6 years, I believe, for RT. RT is a television network. It's funded out of Russia. It's the, you know, it's like the Russian version of Al Jazeera or the BBC or Agence France-Presse or whatever. But I'm leaving that program next week. But that you'll only see that on the half-hour show at night. So that's what that is. And this show is not that. So, Ellen, thanks a lot for the call. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And a couple of other things here I wanted to run through, and then we'll get to picking up your phone calls here. I mentioned at the very beginning of the program, back 2.5 hours ago, that that we were talking about about Donald Trump's speech to the United Nations and my specific complaints about it. I need not repeat those, I think. But apparently, I wasn't the only one who was concerned, and this should, I don't know, I feel embarrassed for my country. I don't know how to say it other than that. And I'd be surprised if most Americans don't, at least if they bother to inform themselves. This is from McClatchy, the McClatchy News Service. It's, you know, a nonpartisan, well-respected news service and, you know, good information. And the headline kind of says the whole thing. The article is by Franco Ordonez, and the headline, World Leaders Skip Out on Trump to Avoid Embarrassment. Vladimir Putin, Xi Jinping, the presidents of China, of Russia and China, respectively, along with Germany's Angela Merkel, Venezuela's Nicolas Maduro, and Mexico's Enrique Peña Nieto, all chose not to go to Donald Trump's speech. And turns out, they suggest that, one U.S. official in contact with the diplomatic community said, even meetings that should be a good meeting can veer off in bizarre directions. In other words, they're scared to death that Donald Trump is just going to go nuts on them. And, frankly, I think that that's probably a fairly legitimate concern. So anyway, there is that. There's a couple of other things that are going on that I think are pretty consequential. And one of them is this whole, the Republican Party now has come up with their very own news service, believe it or not. And, this is like as strange as it gets that they've got a new Republican healthcare, whatever you call it. And, it's pretty amazing, really, when you think about it, that the Republican Party would say, sure, let's create our own network. And I mean, this goes back to, Roger Ailes was in the Nixon White House, and he put together this proposal for what they called GOP TV, right? Republican Party television. And Nixon wouldn't fund the thing. They tried to get Nixon to come up with the money for it, but Nixon wouldn't fund it. But now the Republican Governors Association is funding, and as of up until just like yesterday, I think it was, they didn't even identify it as anything other than a news source. Like they're trying to get Google and Apple and whatnot to carry their stories, but their stories are all about how wonderful Republicans are. And, they talk about how, there was a hurricane in Florida, or in Texas, rather, and look at what Greg Abbott did. Isn't it wonderful? But when there's a hurricane in Louisiana, where you've got a Democratic governor, it's like, we're not even going to literally discuss that. It is pure Republican propaganda, but it is not identified as that. And that's a pretty astonishing thing. That they're pulling this thing off, and that they were not revealing, where the source of it was, and all this kind of thing. It is exactly now what Roger Ailes had originally proposed back in the day was that the program be his GOP TV program, that every day they record a little 5-minute newscast, a pseudo newscast at the White House, and then they get them on airplanes. This was even before FedEx. This was in the 60s, late 60s, early 70s. And they put them on airplanes and fly them to radio stations all over or television stations all over the country so that they can be used. And that was fairly expensive. I mean, they didn't have the technology we have today. And so Nixon couldn't sign off on it. So Ailes had this idea, and he eventually took it to Rupert Murdoch, apparently. And Fox News came out of that. And we know now that Fox News even makes decisions based on ideology over profit, which is pretty bizarre for a commercial network. But that's what's going on. But this new network from the Republican Governors Association. This is as weird as it gets. And it's going to be real interesting to see, Facebook, Google, Twitter, this thing with, now they're going after, of course, RT and Sputnik. But, are they also going to go after the Republican Governors Association? Hey, if you're doing news, presented it as news. If you're not, at least disclose where it's coming from, what the funding is or whatever. This is just... So very strange. And, not surprisingly, there's no Democratic equivalent of it. And that's actually a pretty good question, is You know, I'm sure if the Democrats did it, they would be at least a little more transparent. They wouldn't try to pretend that, you know, hey, this is the news. Instead, they'd say this is the Democrats' news, right? And the Republicans may be shamed into that. But would that be a good idea for the Democrats? It might be. Actually.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-808-9925.
Back with your calls right after the break. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. I've told you, I've told the story, a few times on this program over the years of literally right after after Barack Obama, President Obama got elected in November of 2008. That December, he was not yet president, but he had been elected president. He was president-elect. I was visiting my family in Michigan, and my brother and I went to the shooting range. And the guy was nearly out of ammunition and would only sell us a little bit of ammo per person. And I asked him why, and he said, because that N, he used the N-word. He said, you know, that N-word in the White House is gonna take away our guns and our ammunition, and people are stocking up. And I said, that's totally nonsense. And he said, oh no, it's not. And pulled out his cell phone and showed me an email, or maybe actually no, he had a printout under the counter of an email from purporting to be the NRA, God only knows where it was, about here's the specific plan and they're going to propose this legislation, blah blah, and all this stuff. Well, ever since Trump became president, gun sales have collapsed in the United States, right? And, freaky white people are no longer afraid that the government's going to steal their guns. And in fact, they're sitting on lots of guns that they don't know what to do with. So the gun manufacturers are like in big trouble. So what does Donald Trump do? I mean, the NRA helped get him elected, right? So what Donald Trump is doing is, well, this is from Victoria Jones's newsletter today. The Trump administration is preparing to make it easier for American gun manufacturers to sell small arms, including assault rifles and ammunition. This is the stuff like Adam Lanza used to shoot up Newtown, the children, right? To sell this to foreign buyers, according to senior U.S. officials. Aides to President Trump are completing a plan to shift oversight of international non-military firearm sales from the State Department to the Commerce Department. Now, it used to be that when we sold weapons, or the way it is right now, when you sell weapons to foreign countries, governments, or even large quantities of weapons to foreign individuals, they have to go through the State Department. State Department says, are these going to be used against us? I mean, did Al-Qaeda just call up and order 100,000, M-15s? Maybe we should look at that sale, right? But because the State Department is concerned about the international impact of things like selling weapons. The Commerce Department has a whole different mandate. The Commerce Department's job is to make money for American corporations, or help American corporations make money, like weapons manufacturers. So from now on, instead of asking, is selling weapons to this country, weapons that might end up being used against us or against one of our allies, or that might be feeding a civil war or destabilizing a region, or might just produce an explosion of crime, is selling weapons to this country, it used to be the State Department would say, is this a good idea or not for world peace and for the United States? Now the question is going to be, is selling weapons to this country going to maximize the profits for Remington or Smith & Wesson, which is now owned by some other foreign company now? It doesn't get more bizarre than this. I'm telling you, it is just totally strange. Anyhow, Bill in St. Helens, Oregon. Hey, Bill, what's on your mind today?
Hey, Tom, I'm just flashing on the, wouldn't apportioning federal health care dollars to states based along party affiliation be a clear violation of the 14th Amendment Equal Protection Clause?
It would be. This is not so much a specific apportionment like that, but this is the result of the fact that most of the Democratic states, I think all of the democratically controlled states, took the Obamacare Medicaid expansion. And so they've been taking expanded federal dollars now for several years and, using them to fund health care for their people, whereas most of the Republican states, there's three or four exceptions, but most of the Republican states just never took that money. So if you take that money away, It hurts the Democratic states, but the Republican states and don't get hurt. And if you replace that money with a smaller amount of money that the Republican states are willing to take, now your Democratic states are getting less and your Republican states are getting more. But it's not, quote, calling it Democratic and Republican. It's because they chose to participate in Obamacare. Makes sense, Bill?
Yeah, it does. Can I ask a quick rhetorical off-the-subject question? I just keep thinking of the irony here, totally off. I keep wondering if anyone realizes the irony of investigating Russian tampering in our elections by putting misinformation out to the public. Seems like we should be investigating a lot of other people. Okay, that's it.
I don't disagree. I think that there should be a thorough investigation of what role, if any, the Russian government played or individual Russian corporate actors. But it's certainly not limited to them. You're absolutely right. And there's an enormous amount of disinformation in the United States being cranked out by everything from corporations to the Klan. I mean, you know, it just goes on and on. So, hopefully this will be a healthy conversation, you know, and it'll lead to something good. Bill, thanks for the call. Pat in Carbondale, Colorado. Hey, Pat, what's on your mind today?
Good morning. I've been listening to your program since you were broadcasting from Portland. I think it's been a few years.
Mm-hmm. It's been 6 years, 7 years.
Wow. So this is not world-shaking, but, you know, we talked a little bit before about the Democratic Party and a need to have some sort of a unity, a more common direction, something more easily described or, I'm, for example, like Bernie, I'm left of the Democratic Party because I just don't feel they address enough important issues and so on. But so I had a kind of a slogan or a motto, if you will, and it's very simple. It's just a few words. Let's work together. And, it's kind of grown on me since I came up with it here a few weeks ago, and there's a lot of bringing together a lot the word let's, the work idea that we're, together working on a project, that we're together. And, in some ways, this is kind of an antithesis of the Trump ethos that you were talking about earlier. But just some kind of a little piece of glue that would help people, sort of focus on some of the more important issues. So there, I'm just throwing that out.
Yeah, I like it. It's also the refrain in an old Boogie with Canned Heat song, as I recall. Let's work together. There you go.
Yeah.
Let me roll that around in my head for a little bit, Pat. Thank you. That's a great suggestion. I appreciate the call. Kurt in Los Angeles. Hey, Kurt, what's on your mind?
Hey, hello, Tom. How are you? And congratulations to your daughter and family for her wedding coming up.
Thank you.
I'd hoped to talk to you about this before Mr. Sauer came on the air, but it's still is relevant, and hopefully you can provide me some insight. It's about libertarianism and its encroachment into our educational system. About 7 or 8 years ago, one of your former colleagues, Rachel Maddow, interviewed a gentleman by the name of Rand Paul. And he was running, that was back when he was running for Senate. And she had uncovered or explored his ideas about the Civil Rights Act of 1964, in which he was promoting an idea that private business owners ought to have the right to discriminate because they're private. And so if they want to discriminate, this should be their right. Now, at that time, that was his opinion. And as a result of that interview, Rachel Maddow made her bones as a broadcaster. Rand Paul still got elected, became senator, but he it didn't come without a lot of criticism. But now, 8 years later, I'm in a college right now where a law lawyer posing as a professor stated as fact that private businesses do have the right to discriminate, but they don't anymore since 1964 or 62 when the Woolworth counter incident happened with the lunch counter incident. They don't out of fear of peer pressure and riots. And that's why we don't see discrimination. Okay, that's what he's teaching.
That is such That is such BS.
So for the past three, yeah, BS. But that's what he's teaching. This is a lawyer teaching that as fact, not opinion, but fact. Okay. Now he's.
I wonder if that teacher is one of these guys that is being funded in part by one of the Koch front groups.
Right. And I'd hope to talk to you about this before Mr. Sauer came on, but you had your own topic all ready to go. But the next time you have him on, yeah. I just want to try to understand, what is the end game? Why has the Koch brothers sponsored a campaign to rewrite textbooks down in Texas and take out the word slavery and replace it with workers?
I don't know that they specifically did that, but I know that that's been done. I don't know that you can necessarily pin that on David and Charles, but I think the end game is very, very simple, Kurt. It's neo-feudalism. You know, arguably, in a capitalist society, the most stable form of capitalism is feudalism. And in fact, modern capitalism emerged out of feudalism. What happened was many of the, in feudalism, you've got the lords who own all the land and they own all the people on the land, basically, and they're called serfs. And what used to happen back in the, in the 1300s was that the serfs would flee and start their own communities, which they referred to as communes, and out of those, they developed democratic principles. These were the earliest democracies. This is also the origin of the whole, Robin Hood myth. Robin Hood is one of those serfs who fled and said, hey, I'm not going to be doing the Lord's work, the Lord of the Manor House work anymore.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
And Jimmy Carter acknowledged it on this program a while ago when he said, it's not a democracy anymore, it's an oligarchy. And welcome back, David in Los Angeles. Hey, David, what's on your mind today?
Well, Tom, I have to put out up front that I did make my contribution, a donation to the station, and I suggest that everybody that listens to you and Free Speech TV do likewise. But the reason I'm calling in today, Tom, is to not only mention that, but also I really resent the fact that, you guys have to go around with, hat in hand, asking the public to finance this honorable enterprise, whereas there's just a wash of resources and money for propaganda, And incidentally, I did call MSNBC one day last week when they was really on this thing with RT and Sputnik, right? And I say, now, yeah. People are really interested in combating propaganda. RT, Sputnik, and assorted variety of other stations or news outlets do not compare to Fox News. They are weaponizing information, just like you were having this conversation with the lady about her father listening to Fox News for a certain period of time and got to realizing that his behavior was changing, because Fox propaganda is weaponized propaganda, weaponized information to which you can hear when you listen to right-wing people who have been indoctrinated by their propaganda. So this is a discussion that we need to have nowadays, Tom, is that if we're going to allow something as obviously propaganda as Fox News and a sort of variety of right-wing radio stations to have access to the masses like this, then, then shut up about RT. Sputnik or sort of.
Well, I think there's outlets. I think there's a difference. There's just at a gut level for Americans, there's a difference between a news source that's funded by Americans and a news source that's funded by a foreign country. Whether it's Al Jazeera, hey, it's Muslims funding it, or whether it's RT, hey, it's Russians. But I absolutely get your point. And just because Americans are funding something doesn't mean that it's not necessarily full of lies or that it's not even necessarily toxic to the United States. So if I'm getting it, David, that what you're calling for is a more honest discussion about what is and isn't propaganda?
Yes, sir, by all means. And so I think you cited a study with Stanford and another university for those that study people who listen mm-hmm. to
Northwestern,
news.
Yeah.
Right? And also the incidents you cited with the lady whose father was listening to Fox News. I listen to them, Tom, because, you know, it's not just I'm a news junkie. First Amendment, freedom of the press, and information is my, you know, truth is my thing, right? And and so when I see it being abused in the manner to which we are experiencing today, and you can see this in the way our fellow so-called Americans are being propagandized and the results therein.
Yeah. David, I'm sorry we're out of time, but I completely agree. You said it so well. Thanks a lot for the call. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, live from Portland. Matt in Houston, Texas. Hey, Matt, what's on your mind today?
Hey, Tom. First of all, I was listening to your show last night, and I heard some very interesting things. One of the most interesting things I had heard about Eisenhower's last speech, beware of the military industrial complex, but that whole speech was very, very powerful. And I think that that should be made available more in the public now than ever. The other thing,
Matt, I completely agree. Matt, just if I may interrupt you just for a second. Troy, if you can cue up, what he's talking about is Eisenhower's Cross of Iron speech. You know, what we spend on a bomber and all that kind of stuff. And that was not his farewell address. That was a speech that he gave in 1956 or 57 to the American Society of Newspaper Publishers and Editors. Oh. And it's referred to generally as the Cross of Iron speech, just FYI. And after we get off this phone conversation, Matt, if I have time, I will play it for you. It's just a minute long clip. I'll play a piece of it for you. Yep. Matt, finish your thought, and then we'll play Eisenhower for you.
Okay. The other thing was you mentioned a few of the culprits as far as global climate change is concerned, and you seem to be very knowledgeable about the causes of the climate change. I want to ask you a question. I saw some clips that. Because of the climate change is what causes the ice caps to melt in the Antarctic and other places, which complicates the Earth's ability to cool itself by reflecting the sun rays back into the
That's correct. It's called albedo effect.
Right. Now let me ask you a question now. It's the fact that the ice caps are melting, complicated to a greater extent, that it makes it makes the climate change more rapid.
Yes, that's exactly what happens. It's a rapid feedback loop, and it's an amplification. And it's extremely destructive. I mean, you've got. Go ahead.
Okay. I know you don't have much time. I want to get to this. Okay. Now, it just coincidentally that I did some research on this. The culprits who produce these things, the chemical companies, I think one of the people you mentioned was Monsanto, and I know ExxonMobil, all these people produce a product called styrofoam. I read on internet they make very large sheets of styrofoam. They even make styrofoam chips. If these companies were to pool their resources, they could produce a material and put it on flotillas made out of the styrofoam. We're talking about styrofoam. It's white. It's made out.
Yeah, you're talking about restoring the albedo effect. In other words, reflecting sunlight out. And I've seen articles about that as one kind of geoengineering. There's just all kinds of side effects and secondary effects, and you don't know how it's going to work. And one of the problems right now is that because the Arctic has lost so much of its ice, they're now having cyclones in the Arctic, 100, 150 mile an hour winds up there, that are busting up the ice themselves. And, you know, if you had, you know, millions of square feet of lightweight styrofoam, you'd have a serious problem. So, Matt, I got to run, but thank you for the call. Keep thinking. You know, you're thinking good here. I'm assuming Nate has had time to grab a picture of Dwight Eisenhower. So here is former President Dwight Eisenhower talking about how much it really costs us to be in a state of readiness for war, how much a bomber costs, how much a warship costs, whatnot. Here it is.
Every gun that is made, every warship launched, every rocket fired signifies, in the final sense, a theft from those who hunger and are not fed, those who are cold and are not clothed. This world in arms is not spending money alone. It is spending the sweat of its laborers, the genius of its scientists, the hopes of its children. The cost of one modern heavy bomber is this: a modern brick school in more than 30 cities. It is two electric power plants, each serving a town of 60,000 population. It is two fine, fully equipped hospitals. It is some 50 miles of concrete pavement. We pay for a single fighter plane with 500,000 bushels of wheat. We pay for a single destroyer with new homes that could have housed more than 8,000 people. This is, I repeat, the best way of life to be found on the road the world has been taking. This is not a way of life at all, in any true sense. Under the cloud of threatening war, it is humanity hanging from a cross of iron.
That's President Dwight Eisenhower, the last honestly elected and frankly honest Republican president that we've ever had. We have 1 minute to the end of the show. Corky in Hilton, New York. Hey, Corky, you got a quick one for me?
Yeah, I do. I'm glad you got back on to Barack Obama and how Trump is trying to destroy everything he did. His first thing out the gate was trying to get rid of health care. That's Barack Obama's signature issue. He's trying to erase him because he embarrassed him so bad at the Correspondents' Dinner. Did you listen to that again?
I agree. I sat in the room and watched Barack Obama humiliate Donald Trump, and I thought there's going to be hell to pay, and I think that's what we're experiencing right now. I think that was the moment when Trump decided he was going to get his revenge.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. He's had nothing on his mind ever since. We can't get anything done because he hasn't gotten that get back even yet.
Yep, yep, and I have a feeling it's not going to go away. He's not a man who lets go of grudges. Corky, thanks for the call. Spot on. I think you nailed it. And thank you for being with us today. We'll be back tomorrow. We'll be broadcasting all this week from Portland, then I'll be back in D.C. next week. In the meantime, don't forget, democracy is not a spectator sport. Really, it wasn't designed that way. It doesn't work that way. It requires you. We require you. This nation requires you. So get out there, get active. Peg, you're in. We'll see you tomorrow.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, visit TomHartman.com.